This is Money Moves on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Monday edition of Money Moves coming at you from Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas alongside Jonathan Von Tobel, Stormy Bonantoni with you, producer Brian Ortega at the controls behind the glass. I always get particularly excited for Monday shows because there's so much to talk about coming off of a busy weekend. We had another busy weekend this week. We actually even got together, watched a little UFC 319. Would like to thank Dave Ross for the over 2.5 rounds because we got there in the main event.
We did. Big shout out to Mike Palm, too. Made the experience enjoyable as well. But it was a very good weekend, a very eventful Saturday, and I'm going to push back against the grain and say that I enjoy dominance, and I actually thought Shmaev's performance was fun to watch.
You did.
I know a lot of people were going on the boring train, but that was an ass-kicking to the highest degree, and I thought that was actually really cool to watch.
It was just the boring element just comes from it being like a massive hug fest.
I mean, but
but that's his style, right?
I enjoy the intricacies of mixed martial arts, Stormy, okay? And so when you're trying to pass guard, do all these sort of things, you're just getting shut down every single moment. I enjoy and appreciate the small things when it comes to being on the ground in MMA.
Well, so it was one of those things for me, how we have said at times, like with UFC, sometimes I get uncomfortable about how much people get their faces bashed in. I didn't have to worry about that for that fight. So it was actually kind of nice and relaxing for me to watch that one.
Yeah, there was like a moment where he was just kind of like hitting them with like some really soft fists, and that was about it.
But to your point, yes, shout out Mike Palm, because we got to watch the fights in this cool VIP room area. A lot of people that were in town for Bet Bash and stuff were all up there. It overlooks Stadium Swim, so you get the TVs that are in there, and you get like the full Stadium Swim vibe, so it was a lot of fun, and we definitely appreciate getting to be part of that. But that is just the tip of the iceberg for all we have to come on the show today. So let's set the table for the next 2 hours like we always do. Hit us with the rundown.
It's time for the top headlines and topics of the day. This is the rundown.
The wait is over. Week zero is here, ladies and gentlemen. Baby. College football games that count are coming up on our television screen Saturday.
Really looking forward to them, and it's a good slate. Like, you know, we can pretend, or some out there will appreciate what's going on with Sam Houston State, Western Kentucky. I will not. But I will say the other three, at least for me, have some real big intrigue here, right? Obviously, the headliner in Ireland when we get to watch Iowa State and K-State go at it. Stanford-Hawaii has been a very popular bet game. In fact, been a flip of favorites there. Fresno State and Kansas intrigue for, I think, many different reasons. Kansas, obviously, with Daniels back at quarterback, what that's going to look like. I'm the Mountain West guy, as are you. So I think all of this, I'm really excited for four games of football that matter, man.
It will be fun, and we've already seen some line moves, some interesting games to get into. And, of course, Matt Eumanns and Tim Murray, who are actually going to be at that Hawaii game for a special VSiN program.
When is that? Yeah, when is that?
When do they, is it?
Yeah, when's their show? I'll look it up.
Okay.
I'll look it up.
Give us the details.
Or maybe our wonderful producer will have that on hand.
Also, of course, the NFL preseason rolls on, and we titled this Preseason Pulse. How are we feeling through 2 weeks of the NFL preseason? Who's impressed? Who's disappointed? Some quarterback battles we will have clarity on, it looks like, this week. Plus, previewing the game tonight, Commanders-Bengals, Monday Night Football Preseason Edition.
By the way, they will be live this Friday, and then the College Football Tailgate Show will be live on Saturday as well. So, live from Hawaii. Presented by Nahoku. But it's a, you know what?
That took a turn.
Yeah, we just got to do it. Either way, yes, very much looking forward to getting the polls from after 2 weeks of the preseason. I will say, I didn't use this as part of Call Me Crazy. Preseason does matter to an extent. I know a lot of people were trying to crap all over Caleb Williams' performance against the Bills' backups. But I thought the Colts quarterbacks had some pretty good showing. Sounds like Steichen's like right on the verge of announcing in the next couple of days who's going to win that. So very much looking forward to getting some clarity on some key positions and also looking at some guys performing pretty well in these settings.
Yeah, I think the results don't matter, but there are some impactful takeaways that you can have from certain
guys. How is it not a positive that Caleb Williams absolutely ripped the Bills' backups a new one?
We will discuss that and more in a bit. We're going to start off, though, with a little MLB. Pour one out for the Brew Crew win streak. I mean, they were on a sick run, won a franchise record 14 straight games over the last 2 weeks, but the streak came to an end yesterday, 3-2 in a 10-inning loss to the Reds. Crazy weekend, too. They overcame a 7-run deficit on Friday, rallied to win in 14 Saturday. 8 come-from-behind wins over this win streak for the Milwaukee Brewers. Nearly pulled it off again yesterday, but couldn't get it done. So 14, franchise record, comes to an end yesterday.
Dude, I was watching this game yesterday, and I step out of the room just to grab something. I was moving a little slow because, you know, late night the night before. And I just hear I just hear the home run call, and it's like, 2-run shot. I'm like, there's no way. Like, right? Like, there's no way they're going to do this. And I walk out, and I see Contreras rounding the bases. And I was like, holy bleep. Like, this team's really going to pull this off. Now, luckily, as you mentioned, the Reds – even it out, and then, of course, go on to win in extras. But it's just this team in clutch situations, whatever it needs to be, they seem to have every answer. Now, it is August 18th. They're probably going to be the top team in Major League Baseball from a record standpoint. Can they do this in the postseason? We will see if that is going to be the case. I know there are still some doubters here. I know they have the pitching. I guess I have some questions about whether the lineup's going to be this effective. But, man, to be this close to pulling it off again, I was amazed watching that yesterday.
Best record in baseball. They are 53-17 their last 70 games. You look at the way that the odds have shifted for the World Series. They went from 30-1 pre-All-Star break to now around 7-1, third shot on the board. They're third in the NL as well, plus 370 behind only the Dodgers and Phillies in both. Minus 1,100 now in the NL Central with five games now at Wrigley against the Cubs, starting with a doubleheader today. So can the Cubs make any sort of dent back into that, what is it, eight-game deficit now for them in the division?
Yeah, and I would say, too, I mean, look, the market, I'm going to be very curious to see how the market bets this series on a day-to-day basis and if there's going to be some sort of belief in this Brewers team in this sort of a scenario. Yesterday, we had a big flip of favorites in that Reds game, and now here we are, like you said, eight games back for the Chicago Cubs, a team that for a while the market really did respect. So we will see if we're going to get some of that here today. I cannot wait to see, because, you know, we talk about all these contests, everything like that. It's always interesting to see how the market handles these games, because you do get a sense of, in these big series, you know, how exactly those that shape the market really do view these teams and these starters. Got a sense of it, by the way, in the Dodgers-Padres series, right? Where I was sitting here on Friday going, like, I don't know, man, $1.80, that seems like a little high. It moved a little bit toward the Padres, but sure enough, Padres not only lose the first game, second game, but they lose the third game, and they get swept. So I cannot wait to learn a little bit more about this Brewers team here in a high-leverage series.
Chicago, around a minus 119, minus 120 favorite, hosting the Brewers in two games today. The first of a doubleheader coming up at 11:20 Pacific. Freddie Peralta and Cade Horton going head-to-head. Let's go to the golf, though, because Scottie Scheffler once again pulls out the Thanos, I am inevitable, snaps his fingers, and wins the BMW this weekend. He erased a four-shot deficit in five holes, then hit the shot of the year on the par 3 17th, an 82-foot chip for birdie. That was just the situation around that shot. Like, if you overshoot it, you can go in the water. You could catch yourself 15 feet in front and have it not get anywhere near. And it was just the perfect pace for that ball to get in the cup.
So, okay, first off, we'll steal this from Matt Brown. Scottie Scheffler finishes since the Players, tied for second, fourth, tied for eighth, first, tied for fourth, first, tied for seventh, tied for sixth, tied for eighth, first, tied for third, and first. 13 straight tournaments, finishing no lower than tied for eighth for Scottie Scheffler. And I think, is it now kind of crappy to bet golf?
Yes. Right? We've reached that point.
Are we now at the point where we're going to start to not appreciate what he's doing because he's ruining the drama of the sport?
It's the – well, at least thankfully you have books like DraftKings and others that do the winner without market to give you an opportunity. But it's frustrating. And even looking ahead to next weekend, he's plus 150 favorite to do it again.
Right.
To win back-to-back FedEx Cup champions. So what are you supposed to do?
Yeah, I don't – I'll just say this. I mean, it's – I think it's really hard because you could sit there and you could make the argument, well, he's so good, why don't you just bet him every single week? But as we just rattled off, like, he's not winning every week. He's just finishing in these tied for eights.
And you can't bet the minus 220 on
an entire tournament, because there's a good shot you might be able to get something a little bit better on him to do this. But from a betting standpoint, how dominant this has been and how just – I mean, I want to say doubtless, because, again, he hasn't won every single one of these. But it's insane to watch the way that he's rattling these off, finishing top tens. The prices – we're going to talk about the prices to win these things. Mm-hmm. The prices for these top tens are getting insane as well for him.
Well, that's why I'm saying. I'm like, you can't lay minus 220, minus 2 whatever it is for a top 10, a top 5. It's just – it's not feasible. It's not it's punitive to bet him, which is crazy. So what do you do then? And is this something that's going to continue? Because obviously whenever we talk about the dominance that Scottie Scheffler has had this year and last year, you get the Tiger comps. And I heard Kelly Bidlin talking earlier that now it's become kind of like that MJ LeBron situation where we're disputing eras, and what he's doing now might be comparable to some of the stuff that Tiger did, but is that even a fair argument to have or pressure to put on someone? Although he's very emotional. You know, I wish he showed a little less emotion out there, the way that he just goes week after week after week.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we obviously have the easy, I guess, comp, if you will, in terms of where you stand amongst your peers in your era, because we have the betting market, right? And he's starting to get to the point where, you know, he's been getting priced like Tiger for the most part. We're getting closer to that point where it's just going to become a regularity. So I guess you could say that, yeah, he's already on that level, just given the probability of him going out there and winning every single one of these tournaments right now, where the betting market's at every single time. There's almost no doubt. And it's funny, the times you really try, I mean, I go back to the British Open, the time where it seemed like the doubt had reached its peak, where everybody's like, I don't know, you know, the putter on the greens out there, all that kind of blew him away. Absolutely no question about it. So I think we have at that point where, at the very least, he deserves the comparison to where we're at with Tiger.
And imagine if he would have just started the season healthy, too, if the hand injury wasn't there.
Raviolis.
Did feel bad for Robert McIntyre. Just like, what are you going to do?
Right.
Fifth PGA Tour win of the season. First player since Tiger in 06-07 to win at least five times on tour in consecutive years. You mentioned all those top 10s since the player's second longest streak of consecutive top 10s the last 50 years. Mm-hmm. Jack Nicklaus, the last to do it, 14 straight back in 1977. And again, plus 150, that price for him to be the first repeat champ since 2007 in the FedEx Cup coming up next week. We'll talk more golf with Ian McMillan in about 20 minutes here on the show. Analyst, editor over at Sports Illustrated. We'll also in hour two, coming up at 10:30 Pacific, 1:30 Eastern, have Josh Applebaum on the program, our market expert, our market insights expert, rather, talk through some MLB and other things. But when we come back here on the program, diving into a little preseason, I'm actually excited about the preseason game tonight because it looks like we're going to get a little bit of runway with some of these starting offenses.
Yeah, although Washington's situation does not feel as great as Cincinnati's in terms of the guys who are going to play around Jaden Daniels tonight.
We will discuss that, as well as a certain contract that will be discussed plenty, I'm sure, during the Bengals broadcast when we come back here on Money Moves.
Like, am I in danger?
Which we have differing opinions on that contract, by the way, which is we'll talk it over in a second. More Money Moves coming up after this. We're just getting started here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Final game of preseason week two in the NFL gets underway tonight alongside Jonathan Von Tobel with you, Stormy Bonantoni here on Money Moves, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. The Bengals and Commanders going head-to-head. Cincinnati up from 3 to 3.5-point favorites. Circa, I think, might still be at 4, actually. And this total bet up from 39 to 43, 43.5, and overs have ruled the weekend yet again here, 9-6 to the over after the 12 over performance, or what was it, 14 in week one? It was all over money early on.
So, I mean, so you can get the instance in which maybe it calms down, right?
Yeah.
If today goes under the total, so we'll see if that's going to be the case. The favorites run, as you alluded to, too, kind of calming down there a little bit as well. Or, excuse me, the underdog run. Still a slight edge coming into today. So you alluded to it. Jaden Daniels is going to play, according to Dan Quinn. The quote from him, from Quinn, that is, quote, I would say it's a little bit customized, but we'd like to see a few series, and we're excited to see the guys. They're excited to get performing, too, so we customized it a little bit. My issue here is three of the five starting offensive linemen are not going to play today for the Commanders. So, you know, I'll harken back to my team, the Indianapolis Colts, where – you know, you saw the dangers of that. Again, not the sack that dislocated Anthony Richardson's finger, but the fact that he was pressured on three of his four dropbacks that he played in that game. The offensive line play wasn't great for either him or Daniel Jones. And so are you going to risk Jaden Daniels a lot with three backup offensive linemen in a preseason game? So I'll be curious to see. He's going to be out there. What do they ask him to do? Mm-hmm. What do they really even try to do out there tonight?
What he does have working for him, though, is that not only is the Cincinnati Bengals defense a bad one, but correct, if you're seeing largely the second string depth guys on that Bengals defense, I'm not sure you're going to be as scared of those guys coming for you either.
Yeah, that's going to be – so I didn't send this in to Brian because I didn't know, like, how we were going to, like, bounce off of it, but I was watching Zach Taylor's press conference on Saturday, and the vitriol with which he spoke of the result against Philadelphia about just, like – we didn't do anything right. It was pre-snap. It was post-snap. It seems very much like they, and Taylor, I'm assuming, is delivering the message of the team as the head coach, that they want to bounce back from that performance against Philadelphia in a really big way. For those who don't remember, Philly in that game, 432 total yards, 5.9 yards per play, and ran the ball pretty well as well. Overall, just four yards per carry, but did a lot of damage on the ground early on. So I do wonder if there is, not only like from a game planning standpoint, I think the offense is going to be fine, but what you get from the defense and actually trying to, like, I don't know, send some different looks and actually some exotic packages and actually trying to win this game at least while your guys are in there to start. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, again, 3.5 points the spread here. Do you have any thoughts on that move for the total being a little bit too much potentially, 39 to 43.5?
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to get the same defensive, just because you want to do something, right, doesn't mean you're going to.
Sure.
So, like, Zach Taylor could say, hey, we want to be better. Yeah, well, if you're limited, right, yeah. You know, then you're limited.
I'm
you
sure
can't
they
really
thought that
it.
A lot last season, right. As a whole. So.
You're right. I always make the joke, like, you know, us, like, five of us here could be really motivated in a pickup game against the Lakers. Like, doesn't mean that we're going to really do anything, right? So I think that could be the same case here where maybe you try, but ultimately this defense is limited. So if that's going to be the case, you can understand why this is going to be priced the way it is from a total standpoint. We should also note, though, no Marcus Mariota today, so you're really going to get high-level backup quarterback play either for the Commanders. And if I'm on to something here with the fact that the Daniels is only going to have three backup linemen in front of him, I mean, are they just kind of putting him out there, running the ball, one quick pass, and then let's get him out, and then you're not really going to get much great offense from there. So, in other words, I think I'm kind of making a case for a small under here, okay, potentially. Again, you talk about the adjustment, how we've been bet up, where we're at now. And the fact that the unders, we talked about the market adjustment for the week and the fact that we're still sitting at that 8-7 mark, depending on where you price your closing numbers. So I think you can make a small case for an under.
Another guy who won't be out on the field, but no surprise, Trey Hendrickson. And we'll talk more about this a little bit later, but at least worth noting here that in addition to him having requested a trade, now apparently the team is entertaining trade offers.
Yeah. Can I add really quick? I'm sorry, I didn't finish the point, which was you could also go in-game under. Right. So, like, if you get your two starters out there last week, for those who don't remember, starters played 16 snaps for the Bengals, two drives. So if you get that out there and you get like a scoring flurry where the Bengals score on their first two drives, let's say Washington goes down, does whatever, then all of a sudden you might get an inflated in-game number to come back under on. As we've discussed, we were talking about that during the Hall of Fame game. That came to fruition in a lot of these different games that get off to a hot start.
Okay, for sure. And I wanted to talk to you. So I'm hoping that we have this sound. I maybe sent this text to producer Brian a little bit too late. But we were talking earlier, and we have talked a lot about the quarterback battle out there with your beloved Colts, Anthony Richardson and Daniel Jones, and where the progress has been at on that decision. Apparently, Shane Steichen would like to announce a starter shortly. Take a listen.
Have you seen enough?
I've seen obviously 3 weeks of it, so I'd like to have a decision here shortly.
Do you have any more clarity on your decision now than you did 24 hours ago?
I feel pretty clean when I make that decision. And again, when I make this decision, I'm going to do what I feel is best for this football team.
I'm probably reading too much into it, but I do love the tone of, I've seen 3 weeks of it. watching these two guys flounder around and play quarterback. Trust me, I've seen it. Look, I'll Babe Ruth it and call my shot. I think it's going to be Anthony Richardson. Like we talked about a couple of weeks ago, and I think we brought this up last week. Even if Daniel Jones is, 55% ahead to like 45%, whatever it is, that's not enough of a gap for you to go, all right, we're done with Anthony. Like, let's see what he's got. His first drive, I thought, against who did they just play? The Packers. Was really solid. He ultimately goes, I think, 6-for-11 in the game, but had some really nice, decisive throws. One of the highlights you saw actually didn't count. I don't know if you saw the dime he dropped over the shoulder of his receiver in between two Packers defenders on the same play. He might have missed a wide-open real route that would have gone for a touchdown, but still was like a really good throw. And you just kind of, again, like you spent the fourth overall pick on him. It's easier to say, you know what, Daniel, we're going to go to you later. Let's see what Anthony Richardson has, because it doesn't really make that much sense for them to start Daniel Jones and then say, all right, let's see what this kid's got again in the middle of the season. Like, I think it should be reversed, and I think Richardson's probably going to be the guy.
Yeah, I think that, Daniel Jones would have had to have really done something special this offseason and preseason to move the needle that much against Anthony Richardson. And to your point, like, they want him to be the guy. They want this to work. And as someone especially who has had such limited professional and, quite frankly, collegiate game reps, they need him to continue to do that to see what they have. And so I think it's going to be Richardson too. We'll see what it looks like ultimately, but they are not the only ones that need to make a quarterback decision this week. Still up in the air on what's going to happen with the New Orleans Saints and the Cleveland Browns. Although I looked at FanDuel this morning and saw -390 something for Joe Flacco to be the week one. Is that not high enough?
That seems very cheap, considering
right? That's
everything
what I'm
we've
saying.
Heard.
Like that
yes.
doesn't seem like should we not be at a much higher number than that now? Because who else is Joe Flacco hasn't started at all. Everybody else is injured.
Right.
And
Kenny Pickett's not going to steal it from him.
He's gotten all the first team. He's gotten the majority of first team reps every day.
Yeah, that's weird. Everything you hear out of Cleveland is that Joe Flacco's the guy.
Correct.
Why in the world would it be that cheap at -390? I'm going to pull this up real quick.
Maybe a missed opportunity by me and call me crazy to say is -390 something cheap.
No,
but yeah, that's what I saw on FanDuel.
What also goes back to, as we always talk about, right? Like, let's if that's, you know, if something available, and again, the prices are, excuse me, what they're taking, the limits aren't going to be that much. But we always get into this conversation of value, and people just think value is a plus price. But if you're going to tell me that that's the price, that seems like a very cheap price for Joe Flacco, who, you talk to people in Cleveland, you read reports out of Cleveland, he is the guy. Mm-hmm. Like, not even to the point where, like, oh, you know, these guys might push him. Like, no, they're treating him as the veteran starter who's going to be the dude week one. Yep. I think I'd be very shocked if he's not the starting quarterback.
Yes, agree. 100% agree at this point. We did at least finally see Dylan Gabriel in preseason action this week. And what I thought was funniest coming out of that was just the misconstrued, out of context comments that he made about entertainers and competitors that went viral everywhere.
The price is still up, by the way.
It is, so yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at it, yeah.
So it's interesting to see that that's still available that way, when it seems pretty clear cut delivered that Joe Flacco is going to be the guy. And he hasn't even been playing in preseason games to garner a potential injury outside of practice when he's right. wearing the red jersey and nobody's allowed to touch him.
Headline: Joe Flacco may have Brown's starting quarterback job locked down.
So there you go. Another preseason game that obviously I'm sure caught a lot of people's eye over the weekend, and we referenced it a little bit in the opening block, but Caleb Williams' performance for the Browns, and, you know, leading that 97-yard touchdown drive, that I think it was a 36-yard touchdown pass to seal it, and just looking very, very sharp. And I know it's against the Bills twos, but if you are listening to a lot of the reports that have come out of Bears camp, where Ben Johnson has been overloading Caleb Williams, giving him all of this information, there were question marks about what he's going to look like and how he's going to operate that offense, you have to be very, very pleased if you saw what Caleb Williams did this weekend.
Yeah, it goes back to, again, you know, do you think that Caleb Williams is going to be a Hall of Famer now? No. But is it good that Caleb Williams, with a clean pocket, was able to go out there
yes.
and operate at a very high level? I would say yes. Got a PFF passing grade of 86.6. Ultimately, the stat line was great. Didn't put the ball in danger. You just looked at the physicality of it, right? The throws, where they were getting placed, like you mentioned. Like, it's just a positive, right? We were all freaking out because he couldn't hit the net in that one viral clip. By the way, we didn't follow up with the next day where he actually hit all the throws in the net.
Don't you love, like, how that happens?
Right, exactly. Like, let's just, I'm very much, and as you know, as you are as well, a Bryce Young truther. It's foolish to throw out everything after one season. You just don't know what's going to happen. And so the fact that he's with this offensive mind, an offensive line that was completely rebuilt in a new system that can maybe work to his strengths, yeah, like, I'm not going to give up on the kid. And it was a positive that we saw it.
Well, remember, real games are right around the corner. We will be here before we know it with the NFL season. College football week zero kicking off this Saturday. And if you go to VSiN.com/subscribe right now, don't forget, you get access to both of our college football and NFL guides, all of the betting tools and articles at VSiN.com. $9.99 for your first month if you come join us right now. VSIN.com/subscribe. You can even save 50% off with an annual plan as well.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We'll talk about this more in the next segment, but we got to at least mention real quickly, number 9 for the Los Angeles Rams, Matthew Stafford, walking out onto the practice field this morning. So we at least, the first time that he has been spotted out there on the field with the team in pads.
Yes, we should specify he's in pads. He's in the jersey. He's just walking, though. We have yet to know what his role in practice is going to be today. So, we'll
and
see.
Yet, all yeah. of the tweets freaking out right now. So we'll give you a little bit of an update on that. Sean McVay is supposed to speak after practice and address what the latest update is on Matthew Stafford as well. That said, for now, very excited to welcome in our good friend on the show, Ian McMillan, on the Progressive guest line, Sports Illustrated editor. You can follow him on X at @MeAndIan McBetts, and lots to get into. I want to start with the golf, though, because we talked off the top of the show, obviously, with Scottie Scheffler winning yet again at the BMW over the weekend. And is it just impossible to make money on golf outrights these days with what Scottie Scheffler has continued to do?
Yeah, listen, most people have just not bet on Scottie Scheffler at all. I've actually done something even worse, which I've bet on Scottie Scheffler actually quite a bit, but I just bet on him at the worst possible times. I bet on him at 2 majors this year to win, and those are the 2 majors he didn't win. And then for the playoffs, I bet on him 2 weeks ago, and he didn't win. And then I did not bet on him this last week when he did win. So Scottie Scheffler has annoyed me more than anyone else. I think at this point, especially for this week, and it's something I know that a lot of people have done over the past couple of months, is just to kind of bet on the without Scottie Scheffler market, and makes it a lot more stress-free. Because I'm sure, I mean, for people, anyone who had Robert McIntyre this past week, I'm sure you weren't feeling comfortable and it proved, you know, you shouldn't have felt comfortable heading into the final round with like a 4-stroke lead. So I think at this point with Scottie Scheffler and probably heading into next season as well, maybe just bet the without Scottie Scheffler market. It's going to make things a lot more stress-free.
We're not averse to, I mean, you don't want to like lay the prices for him to be a top 10. I'm finished. I mean, the guy's a machine. It doesn't really seem to matter what the price is. Has this market adjusted too much in that direction?
Yeah, I don't know, man. You could probably just keep betting Scottie Scheffler to finish in the top 10. There was a couple years ago, or maybe it was just last year, where I bet Scottie Scheffler top 10 every week, and then I rolled it over week after week. And I think I did it 6 weeks in a row. And I won a decent amount of money doing that. So maybe you just do that. Maybe for outrights, you bet Scottie without the Scottie Scheffler market, and then you just lay the price on Scottie Scheffler top 10, roll it over a couple weeks. Because, yeah, we've seen him now. Even if he brings like a C-plus game, he still finishes like sixth. It's truly, truly amazing. In terms of like, I know the comparisons to Tiger Woods is kind of unfair and it's kind of overdone at this point. But when you just look at his like 2-year run that he's been on, it's just as good as a couple of years that Tiger's been in his prime. Now, what Tiger did differently is he did it for like a 15-year stretch. Can Scottie Scheffler do this for 10 to 15 years? Probably not. But this is unbelievable golf we're seeing from this guy. But it does make betting on the PGA Tour a little bit more difficult for sure.
Only minus 1,200.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool casual, minus 400 for a top five, plus one, like just, it is what it is at this point. So with that in mind, with the top of the board and Scheffler's prices being unbettable for those of us normal folk out here, if we're trying to, whether it's a win or without, or just get involved in some way, shape, or form with head-to-heads, matchups, anything like that, where did you look? And I know it's still so early in the week, and there's a lot of discussion to be had before this gets underway for the Tour Championship, but anywhere initially early on you've been looking?
Yeah, there's been two golfers I've been looking at specifically. Number one for maybe a top five bet is going to be Justin Thomas. I know he hasn't been in great form. He's been okay, not great. But his course history here is unbelievable. Top nine every year that he's teed up at East Lake. And that doesn't include the starting strokes back in the old format. So just for gross scoring, he's been top nine every time that he's teed up at East Lake. So maybe not to win, but maybe a top five bet for Justin Thomas just based on course history. And the other golfer I'm looking at, I think I found him 22-1 to in the winner without Scottie Scheffler market. That's Ben Griffin. When you look over the past 3 months, the top three golfers on the PGA Tour in true strokes gained, it's Scheffler number one, Tommy Fleetwood number two, who of course we're not going to bet on Tommy Fleetwood to win. If you're betting on him to win, go to therapy because you got to figure some things out. Number three on that list is Ben Griffin. I still think he's underrated on the betting market. He had a pretty good showing this past week as well. So 22-1 for a winner without Scottie Scheffler market. So basically for him to finish second place, Ben Griffin, I think, is going to be a pretty good look this week.
All right, Ian, let's move over to baseball. We have 6 minutes left. I want to get your thoughts. Let's just go generally. Your Toronto Blue Jays, what are we doing with the Blue Jays? Just in the big picture, how we feel about this team and the way they've been playing?
Listen, I'm biased, of course. I'm Canadian. I live in Toronto. I'm a diehard Jays fan, but I think this team just continues to be underrated. They have the best record in the American League, 10-1 to win the World Series, the same price as the Seattle Mariners. What are we talking about? Like, the Jays need to get a little bit more respect. They lead the majors in basically every single offensive category since the All-Star break. They have arguably the deepest lineup in the majors right now. They're leading in WRC plus. For today's game, I'm just going to take the Jays. Why are they like slight underdogs against the Pirates? I get the Paul Skeens is starting for the Pirates today, but the Pirates are only 12-13 in his starts. It's not like when he takes the mound, it's an automatic win for the Pirates. They still got to find a way to score runs, and he has, you know, a pretty decent pitching matchup in Kevin Gausman for the Jays. So this is a no-brainer of a bet for me. The Blue Jays need a little bit more respect in the betting market. I don't think they're getting it. I'm going to back them today, slight underdogs against Pittsburgh.
Plus, if Paul Skeens is a little off like he has been his last two starts, then there you go. I want to go from there then to the NL West, where the San Diego Padres just a couple days ago took sole possession of the top spot in the division and then get swept by the Dodgers. Give it right back. Now they are opening up a 4-game set with the Giants, who they swept last week. What are you looking at for game one, and what do you make of that division, to be honest, right now at the top?
Yeah, I like the Padres a lot, actually. I kind of like them, their World Series odds right now. Obviously, that was a bummer, them getting swept by the Dodgers. But you look at their offensive numbers since the All-Star break, still very good. Fourth in the majors in WRC+. I like them against the Giants tonight. I just don't think the Giants can match them offensively. But I also really like a prop bet for this game. Robbie Ray, under 5.5 strikeouts in this game. Padres, second lowest strikeout percentage in the majors since the All-Star break. They've only struck out on 17.1% of their plate appearances. The only team that's been better, my Toronto Blue Jays, in that department as well. But Robbie Ray's only hit even 5 strikeouts in just 3 of his last 5 starts. So I think that's a pretty good number on Robbie Ray for the under on his strikeout total. But so I like that. And I also like the Padres to win. Like I said, discouraging that they got swept by the Dodgers, mm-hmm. but you still have to like a lot of their offensive numbers they've posted since the All-Star break.
You like anything else tonight in Major League Baseball?
Yeah, I like the White Sox to upset the Braves tonight. The White Sox quietly extremely good offensively. I know these two teams actually coming into this series complete opposite ends of the spectrum. The White Sox have lost a few games in a row. The Braves have won a few games in a row. Obviously, neither team is making the playoffs, but I do think if you're looking for a big upset tonight, I think the White Sox can pull it off. 6th in OPS since the All-Star break, 5th. And WRC Plus, Spencer Strider starts for the Braves today. He's not been good lately. 13 earned runs in his last 8.2 innings pitched. So he's going to have to pick things up because this White Sox offense, surprisingly, has actually been kind of hot lately. So, I think this is too big a number on the White Sox. I think there's some value there if you're looking for a big upset.
You do mention the Braves winning a couple games. 5-game win streak they take into that one today. Too little, too late there, boys. Too little, too late. Very disappointing, yeah. The Atlanta Braves this season. Obviously, the NFL is right around the corner. Ian, how much have you been betting the preseason? Do you bet NFL preseason, or have you been focusing this time on anchoring your NFL futures portfolio?
I've sprinkled a little here and there, not really any big bets on the preseason. I've mostly been locking in on my NFL futures for this year. I actually wrote an article over on Sports Illustrated, 32 bets for 32 teams. I broke down my best futures bet for every single team this season. I'm also going to be recording an episode of the Bacon Bets podcast later this week where I'm going to dive into those picks a little bit deeper. So, yeah, I have a futures bet on all 32 teams for this upcoming season. So I'm excited. It's coming up.
Give me one for the Indianapolis Colts.
The Indianapolis Colts, for my best bet for them, over 7.5 wins. I actually kind of like the Colts a little bit this season. I don't think they're actually going to make it into the playoffs. But I think if they stay healthy this year, they finished 8-9 last season. So all they have to do is match the record from last year. Not super high on the Colts, but I do think their win total's a little bit low. 16th in net yards per play last season. So I actually think they are a little bit of a better team than they kind of get credit for last year. So I'll take the over on the Colts win total.
Over or under 12 games that Anthony Richardson plays? See, that's a fair question, too.
I'm going to be hoping JVT for my win up. Total that it's over, because if Daniel Jones starts, then my bet's going to be hurting. So I hope Anthony Richardson can get healthy. I hope he can complete more than like 46% of passes like he did last year, because we've seen him at his best. We've seen kind of the explosiveness, the arm talent he does have. He does probably have to take a step forward this year and stay healthy. Unfortunately, probably under 12.5 starts for Anthony Richardson. I'm probably going to have to rely on Daniel Jones at some point this year for me to cash the over on my Colts win total ticket.
And that's
going to stick.
Had to put it out there. Ian, you're awesome. Thank you so much for the time today. We appreciate it.
And thank you so much, guys. Take care. Good luck.
Make sure you check out the 32 Bets for 32 Teams, host of Bacon Bets podcast. Download wherever you get your podcasts and all the work over at Sports Illustrated. Really appreciate Ian's time. I don't know why I keep on, like,
It's because I'm peppering
because
you guys
the extra
with text messages.
There's the extra I. We got to take a timeout when we come back. Call me crazy, but reacting to the weekend that was.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Okay, we're back here on Money Move. Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel with you. And remember, everybody, tomorrow's the day. The winners of the two grand prize packages will be announced on a numbers game. Two winners will each win a Circa Million paid entry proxy service from Winner Circle Proxy and a VIP tour of VSiN's Las Vegas studios. Tune in tomorrow to a numbers game, 10 to noon Eastern, as they announce the winners. Your name could be heard.
Put on your tinfoil hats.
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
The whole world gone crazy.
For Call Me Crazy, But.
Call Me Crazy, But coming at ya. Got a couple of fun items here, especially with the news that came through about 10 minutes ago that Matthew Stafford is out there on the practice field for the Los Angeles Rams today. First time we've seen him out with the team in pads. He was supposed to do a workout this Saturday. And then when a Rams spokesperson was asked about whether or not that took place, he declined to comment. Said an announcement would be coming today. So that kind of would, rightfully so, I think, freak some people out about what maybe Sean McVay might have to say. That said, call me crazy, but I cannot wait to hear Sean McVay's press conference today and get an update on what truly is going on here.
Yeah, like you said, we're seeing some of the footage. He's walking out. We're seeing him take some snaps under center. There's a bunch of rollouts. Like, this one's actually not going to do too much for you if you're watching it at VSiN.com. Just a really simple just play action and toss. But he's rolling out in a couple of the other practice footage and throwing against his shoulder, all that kind of stuff. So maybe this is something. But I think, going back to what we had discussed a couple of weeks ago, I don't think it's a big deal that he's back at practice. It's how does his back respond after. Right? Because we had the, 60-throw workout, whatever it was, 2 weeks ago. And then all of a sudden, the day he was supposed to come back, he didn't. So how does he respond to this? And including, too, by the way, if he did work out over the weekend. So if he did work out over the weekend and he's doing this, how does the back respond now?
Correct. And so that's what I'm waiting on, pins and needles. I want to hear what Sean McVay has to say because, yes, coming out of that Saturday workout from a week ago, he was supposed to come back on Monday and then proceeded to miss the entire week. Yep. So what ultimately was the workload on Saturday if he did complete the workout? How does he respond to then 2 days in a 3-day span of him practicing and getting work in? And so that is critical when it comes to what the Rams are going to be this year. Your aging quarterback dealing with a disc issue in his back when you've had a history of neck and back issues, not my favorite thing. Okay, what do you got next?
All right, call me crazy, but Trey Hendrickson's totally getting traded, and it's going to happen pretty soon here, huh? I mean, this is like this is the one of the most poorly run franchises in the National Football League. Your team is abysmal on defense. You did your best to alienate your rookie first-round pick along the defensive line, and now all of a sudden, at the worst possible point, reports are that you're actually listening to offers for Trey Hendrickson, and maybe some reports, we have conflicting reports here, are saying that, yeah, you want a first-round pick and a young defensive player. Others are stating that you're actually willing to move off of what the package initially reported was. So this franchise sucks. They're not a serious franchise in any way, shape, or form. He's gone because they're poorly run, and they'll get a bag of footballs and like a third-string DB for him.
If that were to happen and you're Joe Burrow, you've got to be freaking livid. Because as if this defense wasn't bad enough already with the NFL sack leader on it, what are they going to be without him? As you mentioned, also having alienated your first-round pick who you bring in to help re-cement that side of the ball, at least to make slight, subtle improvements. So I'm going to actually say call me crazy, but Trey Hendrickson doesn't get traded because you just can't. You can't do that to this offense that the only way they can have success is by outscoring opponents. They lost 4 games last year when they scored 30 or more points. That shouldn't freaking happen. Also, just to add to this, from the DraftKings odds board, the Bengals are -450 to still be the team with which he plays his next NFL snap. The Panthers, 5-1 shot to get him. The Lions, 8-1. Colts and Packers tied at 10-1.
Let's go Colts. Go get him.
I would love if
seriously.
I would love the Panthers to get him.
Well, of course. I mean, we both would, as we are a pro-Packers, or excuse me, a pro-Panthers team show. But I will say this, in terms of like the seriousness about Indianapolis, you do have like some good young pieces. Your quarterback room is an absolute mess. I don't know if you saw it today. They went and got, I think it was Xavier Rhodes, that they signed as a free agent because they have 4 corners that are injured now at this point right now. They have some decent talent along the defensive line. DeForest Buckner, I don't think you're going to flip him, but do you flip like Quiddy Pay and like a first-round pick to go and get to go and get them. You're a franchise that has a history of flipping first-round picks for proven players. Now, some of them don't work in Trent Richardson. Some of them have, so we'll see if that's the case. But Indianapolis in a winnable division, go and get the best pass rusher, one of the best pass rushers in the NFL, wouldn't be crazy.
However this does play out, needs to happen before the season, correct?
Oh, yeah. I would assume that's the case, but again, it's not a serious team, so who knows what they're going to do.
It's so bad, and they're so cheap constantly. Plus, you finally pay some of your guys, and now you're like,
You have to be fair, Stormy. The process is clearly working with all the Super Bowl
obviously.
Titles.
Obviously. Yeah. Big winners over there. Okay, where are you going next?
Let's see. Let's go to baseball really quickly. I hate this. The Dodgers are going to win the World Series, aren't they? You have everything in front of you. The Padres go in there. Like you mentioned, we were talking with Ian McMillan. They have the lead in the division. They're hot. This is it. Go put your foot on the throat of the big bad wolf at the top of the division. What do? You get swept. You had 213 across three games. Your offense does absolutely nothing in that entire series. And then here you are with the opportunity of a lifetime, and it's the same old BS
crazy
with the Padres.
It was the most Padres thing ever. The most Padres thing ever.
It's unbelievable. And they got another set coming up, right? There's one set that they've played, and they're going to another one coming up. I get it's one series, but this was the time. This is what you were supposed to do. They just got swept by my team. The Angels just went in there and won seven straight. And then, by the way, followed that up by getting their asses kicked by the Athletics over the weekend.
Yeah.
And then you can't take advantage of that. And then to expand this out, because we're focusing a little on the NL West, this is going to be ridiculous. The Dodgers just can go into the playoffs, and all of a sudden you're going to get high-end pitching. Shohei Ohtani is going to go insane for like three series. And then we're going to look in the NLCS. They're going to be up like 3-0 over the Brewers. And we're going to be like, what the hell? What are we doing? What were we thinking the whole time?
Those three games, by the way, were in L.A. The Padres are hosting San Francisco the next four games, and then they host LA for the next three. So that weekend series coming up, they at least get at Petco Park. So we'll see if they can do a little bit more with it on their own turf. How about this one? Call me crazy, but the Falcons should have played Michael Penix Jr. this preseason. I'm a little bit confused by this. Reports this morning out of Atlanta, the head coach Raheem Morris said neither Michael Penix Jr. nor Kirk Cousins are going to play in this weekend's preseason game. I don't mind it for Cousins, right? He's old. He's dealt with some injuries. We know what he is. He's a proven guy. But Michael Penix Jr. only played three games last year for the Atlanta Falcons. Went 1-2 in those games. 58% completions, three touchdowns, three picks. Do we not need to see him get a little bit more game action work and have him ready to go?
I mean, I guess it depends on how you value practices, joint practices, and those over the preseason. He's seen live action against other teams, so I would assume that maybe you feel like that's enough.
I feel silly, like, talking about this kind of stuff, but if Patrick Mahomes is playing in preseason games, if some of these, like, stars of the league are playing in preseason games, and we see how that helps them translate to the regular season, wouldn't you want just, like, a drive or two, at least?
So my question would be, what is it if he – let's say they played a scrimmage or whatever it is against, you know, in their joint practices. Sure. What is the difference doing it in a closed-door setting versus where we can all see it?
I think it's a fair argument, right? Yeah. And that's what any head coach is going to say. But I – and again, maybe I'm naive and maybe I'm dumb, but I feel like there's something to it. There's something to going to the, like, getting your jersey on, being in the locker room, going out onto the field, doing your process of a game week.
There is a head coach that is going down your path, is supporting your point. The team that's going to play tonight, the Cincinnati Bengals, they believe there is a difference there, right? They have not cared about the preseason. They have only done, you know, these practices and all that.
Yes.
And they believe it has been part of the reason why. So they're now trying in these preseason games. So we'll see if that matters. But there's at least a team out there that believes your line of thinking that maybe we should play these like they're actual games.
Anything else last 90 seconds you want to throw out there?
I would just say, are we sleeping on these Las Vegas Aces? Oh, boy. They've won 9 out of the last 10. They've covered, I believe, 8 of those contests. How about this? The last 7 games for Asia Wilson. They're on a 7-game winning streak right now with her in the lineup. 26.1 points, 13.3 rebounds, 2.7 assists, 1.7 steals, 1.5 blocks per game. Over the course of these 7 games, we're talking about shooting 48% from the floor, 37% from 3. She's absolutely crushing every single one of these teams. Now, having said that, they're not really playing like the best of the best at this point right now, but they are hot. We are nearing the end of the season. They have championship pedigree, and much like LeBron, every single given year, I don't care if she doesn't win MVP, Asia Wilson's the best player on the planet. You always got a shot.
Your Lynx are plus 150 to win the title. The Ace is 12-1. You firing?
I feel bad because, again, one of those conversations of I missed out on the best of the number. The other part is, as I mentioned, I do have some trepidation because they haven't really been beating up on the best of the best. They are 9-1 in their last 10 games. The one loss a 53-point blowout to the Minnesota Lynx. So you have a little bit of reservation, but it's hard to deny how hot this team is. And I think how weak the back end of the WNBA seems to be at this point right now, where a run, a very deep run, I don't think would be insane for Asia Wilson and the Aces.
Can Becky Hammon do it?
I mean, it's just Asia Wilson. Becky's not doing anything.
the Lynx,
her best
again,
coach wins a Golden State, and now she's got nothing.
Plus 150, the Liberty, plus 190 as your two shortest shots on the board in the WNBA. We're going to step aside when we come back, resetting for hour two of the program. Week zero is here. Ladies and gentlemen, college football, meaningful games on our screens coming up this week. We'll hit on that and a whole lot more in the second hour of the program.